The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Sure that we had some appropriate introduction for you on this second of our Halloween programs. And I hope that summed up enough of the spirits to move even the most skeptical soul.
I would think so. I would think so. That was magnificent.
110 human beings playing is, well, they were playing as if one. That's the best way to sum it up.
Mm-hmm.
Channeling a message.
Any good symphony is.
Yeah, yeah. You know how few people understand what a conductor does to a piece of music or doesn't do? Here's a piece of music, a magnificent symphony. That, to me, from start to finish, is the most cosmic piece of music ever composed. And it's like an incredible machine, not necessarily a race car. You can think of a car if you want. But the driver of the car brings it to life. And the conductor brings the symphony to life.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't just stand up there and wave a stick.
No, no. Some actually do, but the great ones, of course, take the music and make it, to a respectable degree, their own. And that's what the actual composer of great music knew would happen and had in mind. They wanted the music to be taken to new heights through the genius, the interpretive skills, the power, the prowess of the conductor to take it and let it run. That's a great piece.
It is.
And there's actually more to it than that, of course, like an hour more.
Mm-hmm. That's so, what we call the overture.
Well, that was just a little segment from the first movement, actually.
Mm.
Mahler's
had an overture sound to me.
Well, Mahler's Symphony Number 2, The Resurrection. I should send you a copy of this, and if you folks want to get it, be sure you get the Leonard Bernstein New York Philharmonic version, which is available, if you look for it, on Sony. It's under the Bernstein Century moniker, and he did it with the LSO. Not the same. The New York Philharmonic version of the Second Symphony by Gustav Mahler was, without question, it just doesn't get it. It's like Mario will sing a song better than it can be done by anyone. It's called definitive interpretations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so interesting, Jeff. When I was a college sophomore, I guess, Mahler was all the rage.
Well, thanks to Leonard Bernstein. Lenny did it. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you heard it, you know, down the hall you'd go, and there'd be Mahler playing from nearly every room. It was kind of the way Who is today? Lady Gaga, I guess. But Mahler, way back in 1954.
Well, Bernstein essentially discovered, resurrection. He discovered the music of Mahler. There's quite a story to Gustav Mahler and his epoch in music history, how he was birthed from the academy, the music academy that he was granted admission to. It's a very interesting story. Someday maybe I'll tell it. But I remember first it was Mahler, and then people tried to elevate Bruckner to that level, but it didn't work. Bruckner was not Mahler. Bruckner was Bruckner. Mahler was Mahler. And the basic, and some of you out there who are quite musically well-versed understand the music of Mahler, but many of you don't understand that the first five Mahler symphonies were all essentially, and I'm going to say this because it's true, they were essentially, I'm going to be charitable, they were essentially inspired by the lost work of a classmate of his who went insane and was locked away and died of tuberculosis several years later. His opus was never performed, and it was actually pieced together in the late 1980s and finally given a performance as a full symphonic work for the first time about 100 years after he died. And it was so embarrassing to hear Hans Rott, R-O-T-T, his symphony, which was basically a PhD dissertation, as it were, from the Music Academy, because note for note, theme after theme, that were found in Mahler's first five symphonies. But you've got to give credit for Mahler for taking that work and really bringing it to an even newer height. You could call it derivative of Hans Rott's symphony. Some would call it plagiarism. I would lean toward that word, because there was no credit given until much, much later when Mahler said, the world has no idea what it lost when Hans Rott died.
Well, it just would have been so much nicer if when he first performed it,
of course,
he would have said, and I'm in debt to my late friend and
classmate,
co-composer, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would have said that right away. Wouldn't that make all the difference to give credit for something before you're found out that you borrowed?
Liberally. Now, this is segueing perfectly.
I'm speaking also
you're going there. You beat me to the punch. You're stealing my punchline. How many ships has the work of Brad Steiger launched? How many careers has Brad launched? How many of his works have been the inspiration of others? Too many to count. Too many to count.
Well, that's the way of, I guess, the creative arts. You know, we, as we say in the famous Tom Lear song that we play every now and then, and it's been said before he put it into music, you know, if you steal from one work, it's plagiarism, but if you steal from many, it's research.
Research, of course.
I don't know. Sometimes I look at some of the work coming out and I say, that's kind of borderline, but what the heck, you know, at least the word continues to grow among us.
You've been always so astonishingly charitable and gentlemanly about the theft of your the sweat of your brow and your mind, and that of Lady Sherry's too, for that matter. It's amazing to me, but you won't go down into the gutter with them. You know, and most of your fans know when they come across works that are essentially Steiger in spirit, if not Genesis, they know. They know.
It is amusing, though, when I see things presented as brand new, groundbreaking research, and Sherry and I were looking at something just the other day, brown gown baking, and never had anyone gone there before. And I said, what? You know, they didn't go there until 1967 when I first wrote about it. But
and Brad actually did say,
what the heck?
He did. He said, what? He would never say anything more harsh than that.
I did say what?
Never. Yeah, but the two words that followed what, we won't even go there.
Yeah. Fill in the blanks.
What? Blank, blank? Yeah, okay. All right, hold on. When we come back, we'll continue. This is our second Halloween program of the year 2011 before the end of the world next year, so enjoy it. With any luck at all, we'll be able to do more next year before the curtain comes down on the planet, December 23rd, 2012. Isn't that when they say it's coming down? I don't remember. All right, when we come back, maybe we'll play just a little portion of that again to give you an idea of the incredible size of this monumental work. Just a minute of it, just for fun. And then we have two very special guests coming your way tonight. Really neat people, as we always try to do. And we'll continue after this. Favorite expressions, it was a dark and stormy night. I always liked that. Of course, Brad lived many of those as a child. It was a dark and stormy night, and his little feet had icicles hanging from the toes because they couldn't afford glass for the upstairs children's bedroom. That'll make a man out of you. Not that there was any real doubt about it. All right. Here is this music. Now, I want you to turn your speakers up, clear your mind, and just listen to the amazing playing and the composition of this piece of music. Just a little section of it, a minute and a half at the most. Here we go. Okay, I think that makes the point. That's, again, Mahler's Symphony No. 2, The Resurrection, and the only version to get is the Leonard Bernstein New York Philharmonic, which I believe was recorded in 1967, but the recording is absolutely magnificent. It's on Sony, and you can find it under the Bernstein Century Editions. Let's see if we've gotten the maestro back on the line.
I'm back on the line.
Not even Mercury Retro.
Those Halloween goblins are out
there. They are. Got their little scissors, and they've been cutting lines. And
yeah. The gremlins, I suppose, are out, too.
I'd say they're called gremlins, not gremlins. They're both.
Gremlins? Like Grim Brothers?
Like the Grim. It's Grim. Gremlins and gremlins.
Yeah.
So how long were you gone? Did you go down to the store to get some Tutti Frutti ice cream while you were gone? What did you do?
Well, I had about that time to go, but it's so nasty out tonight that I...
What?
Yeah.
Inclement weather in Iowa?
That would be a first, wouldn't
certainly it? Certainly you jest.
That would be a first.
You notice, yeah. I didn't call you Shirley. That old line. Surely
that
you jest.
That old line from Airplane, yeah.
Don't ever call me Shirley. All right. We're going to take a break, come right back, and meet our first of two very special guests on the second Halloween program on a Friday night. Actually, it's the last Friday of October, and we'll do that in just a couple of minutes. Okay, and welcome back. Happy Halloween early to everyone. Remember, the contest is now closed. You can't send any more entries in this year. But you are all invited to go look at the wonderful splash art entries and read the ghost stories. We'll have the... What was that? Laughing? I thought you were laughing. We'll have the winners Monday night for you on the 31st. So far, I have not been able to read all the ghost stories. How are they looking to you?
There's quite an enormous variety, and we're seeing a lot of reports that we knew were out there. They have that feeling of grim, spooky reality to them. And it's going to be hard to pick the winners, but we shall be working on that over the weekend, making our final decision.
You will be endeavoring to persevere.
Endeavoring to persevere.
You always say that.
Mm-hmm.
Old expression.
Old expression.
First special guest is on the line. Her name is Alexandra, and I will leave it to you to fill in the rest.
Well, this is a delight to have Alexandra on tonight on one of our special Halloween programs. Been wanting to get her on quite some time, but she is a busy lady. We should say her full name, Alexandra Holzer, and she is carrying on in the tradition of her famous father, the pioneer psychical researcher and parapsychologist, Hans Holzer. And Alexandra, are you there?
Not only am I here in spirit, but semi-flesh. So, pretty good.
Ooh,
doing pretty good.
that bears some examination.
Here. How are you there?
I'm sure it does.
Semi-flesh means what? Translucent?
Well, that's for, you know, ghost terminology. We're so past that, yeah. Well, I don't know. Nowadays, what can we call it? There's so many new labels to things. I have to work on that
new
one.
New labels.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Now, you use, the tried and true method, which you call, rightly so, the Holzer method. Probably not going in with all kinds of electronic equipment and things that buzz, whistle, and tweet, and hoot, but calling upon the psychic powers of one's own investigation. Would that be fairly close to summing it up?
It really is, and it's not to put down or insult any of those that are out there today, especially those that are successful at it via the media platforms. It's been around long before people have gotten TV shows and so forth, where we had specials and documentaries airing in the 50s and 60s and so forth, where my father was part of that movement, if you will. This has been nothing new, and, you know, it was utilized as a way to comprehend that when we're in the field of the paranormal, what does that mean? Does it mean that we are trending something that's popular and that's how we research, or does it mean we go back to our history and our past and learn about the methodology that was used? And my father was kind of in the crux of that, along with, you know, prior to him, Price and Carrington and so forth.
Right.
So no, he wasn't the creator of the usage of using yourself as a tool, which is really what we're talking about, which is the Holzer method, but the combination of science and metaphysics. He was very scientific and a skeptic, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, let's figure out the fact that we're all living, and then we die, and then we go somewhere in between. You know, it kind of makes sense to utilize your abilities to pull from within yourself to adapt to your environment that is purportedly haunted. And that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's.
I personally think that's a very good place from which to come. again, as you said, not putting anyone down with all the modern devices, but
correct.
I like the Holzer method of combining, as you say, that there's so many of the great psychologists, you know, Price we have just a host of them who have put forth, you know, so much for us to follow. We haven't explored this, and you know, your father never took credit for inventing those methods, but simply employing them. He was out there presenting it, you know, when others weren't.
Well, he really made it popular to talk about ghosts. And when when I say that, he really was, not just because his first book and the title of the book, and then I believe it was he had a TV show based out of Boston, The Ghost Hunter, and then the book's called The Ghost Hunter. He really originated a term prior to which, you know, True Confessions of a Ghost Hunter. And he took from that, and then, of course, you know, the literary world and the publishers, oh, we'll call you the Ghost Hunter, because he really was the Ghost Hunter. He really continued on from his past, and he took history. He didn't put history down. He evolved with it, and he came about in the spiritual movement, moving us forward to where today we've kind of gotten out of hand a bit, but that's a different topic. But, you know, all of that there's a reason to it, and we're layered. And he layered with it nicely. And if anybody was actually put down, it was him in certain degrees for the people that just didn't get it or felt that he was...
Right.
Yeah.
The first time I ever saw your father, he was on some television show or other with Don Rickles.
Can you imagine that?
What? That's really off the wall.
The insult comedian. And I saw Hans up there, you know, just trying not to explode. He kept his cool. He kept his cool, and Rickles just kept on and on. Yep. And you know how Rickles would do? He'd try to be quiet. I think the host reprimanded a couple times, and then he'd giggle and laugh when your father was speaking. And I admired your dad so much then, and I said, you know, I'm going to meet that guy one day, and I hope, you know, to carry on and to, gee, I want to do what he's doing, which I've been fortunate enough to be able to do.
Oh, yeah.
That's very interesting, Don Rickles. I did spend time with Don Rickles.
Oh, how cool.
I didn't get a chance to spend time with your father, but I want to tell you.
Oh, that's not cool.
Don Rickles was one of the sweetest people you'd ever want to meet. And that doesn't come as a surprise, I think, to many of you.
No,
he couldn't do what he did so well if he was really mean. He was
just
sweetheart and a good man, very humble.
Well, you know,
humble.
I mean, I think, and that's a true testament to who my father was, and I think part of the problem I have with today's society and how we're trending in the paranormal, so to speak, you know, as a mother of four, I have youth around me all the time, and I am, even though I'm age 40, and I do admit that, yes, openly, that I'm still very youthful. Well, you know, let it go. What's the point, you know?
I told you to hold on to 39, remember? Do you remember?
I let it go. Let it go. Let it all go. It hits the floor, whatever.
All right.
You know, but basically the point was that, you know, we're all youthful. It's just how we live. And my father always said, you know, age is just a number. Don't ever look at it that way. It's how you live.
That's
and
right.
I feel
good
in today's conjunction. But it's true. And, you know, if you go back and you see the people that he kept company with, you know, and I want to say it was true Hollywood. And what I mean by that is I'm not talking about just actors or actresses, but he really mingled with the likes of old Hollywood, where there was class and style. Not to say there wasn't any debauchery or anything going under the table, but he had the ability, without being on TV all the time and having a TV show, and just by being an intellect and being out there and knowing his stuff, that he was able to reach people and be genuine, like Don Rickles, for instance, where you're just a loving soul.
Right.
And that's a magnet.
Yeah, Alexander, hold on if you would, please. We have to do a little bit of business. We'll come right back in just a minute or two. Okay, and welcome back. The beginning of a mini ice age appears more and more likely. It is snowing in parts of Pennsylvania now. The first time it has actually snowed there in October since 1879. They're expecting 8 to 12 inches tomorrow. It's amazing. All right, now, Hans Holzer in Hollywood. That's an interesting book title in and of itself. You talk about old Hollywood. Alexander, were you part of those experiences with your dad at all? Did you get a chance to experience that?
I really was, and I was more part of that than the whole ghost hunting, if you will, because by the time I appreciated anything he was doing, you know, we were on two different levels. He was on his way out in life, and I was on my way in towards that, you know, but growing up, it was all in my apartment. And so these characters, if you will, would come in and out like a revolving building door and would hold high court with Father and tea and coffee and God knows what food, because as a vegan, it was very interesting to say the least, and a lot of these Hollywood characters would come in with their own food and some of it not smelling too good, I have to add, but that's okay.
Alexander, would you drop some names for fun?
Well, of course, Tina Louise was one of them.
Oh, yeah.
She's Ginger from Gilligan's Island. There was a lot of them, but I think they were a little bit too old Hollywood. But one that escapes my brain, he actually went back to Austria, which is where my father's from. He was also from Austria. He's a very well-known actor. I want to say Turan Bey, if I'm not miscorrect. If anybody looks him up on the IMDb, they'll see that he's had a long list of...
Turan Bey was in many films.
He was one of the classics, and I think he really very understated at times. A lot of women too, black and white classics, movie actresses were there, you know, and they kind of revolved around him. And then there was a lot of writers, musicians, and he wrote music too. So he would connect with people that wrote country music. I mean, he was a huge Elvis fan, and of course there was the book he wrote on Elvis with the New Jersey housewife. So,
interesting. Now, yeah. I noticed you've sent us some interesting clips from time to time of your own, what shall we say, foray into ghost-busting television.
trying.
I think you've been the judge, really, haven't you, on most of them, Alexandra? At least the ones you sent to us.
Yeah, what happened was, for years, you know, with all the TV shows that have been out, you know, I kind of felt like some people just didn't want me to guest on there, you know, and it's kind of like, what do we do with her, you know? And as a woman, because it's very male-dominated, and my father was a male, but to have women not playing the role of a psychic is a very bizarre thing for networks, I think. So here I come along as an intuitive investigator, and so I was finally given an opportunity through a colleague to appear on the Travel Channel for a show twice to kind of sit there as a celebrity guest judge on teams competing. And it was called Paranormal Challenge, and the host was Zach Bagans, who's very successful now on TV for the Travel Channel. And it was kind of my breakout into TV, because I hadn't been on TV before. I had filmed for documentaries, which Father had done many a times, and I felt very comfortable with being open and interviewing. As you can see, I have no loss for words. So, you know, but to be broadcasted on TV for me, which is really my goal, felt very natural, and I wanted more to kind of explore, but I had to sit there and judge something and not really explore the environment I was in and research it and learn more of the history. So that kind of frustrated me, but I was nonetheless appreciative of the experience and the opportunity to go and do that. So,
yeah, it looked like again, not to be putting anyone down at all, but
no,
it looked to be
not.
A strange format where people just walk up and down the halls of this, I believe it was a penitentiary?
Correct. The first one was Eastern State, correct?
Eastern State, right.
State, yeah. I was sent to two prisons, and I said, is somebody trying to tell me something from a former life? Did I do something wrong?
Not you.
Oh, heavens forbid, no.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Now, to comment on if you knew her personally, I became very good friends with a medium psychic that your father used a lot, Sybil Leek.
Oh, Sybil. Gosh, yeah.
Did you ever get to know her well?
She was around a lot when I was little.
Yeah.
And I know that she used to smile a lot. I remember her. I remember her round, smiling face and her
right.
warm personality. And she was just, she'd come into the apartment, and she would just be, like, full of energy and joy and love. And she's just bustling, you know, and she just kind of would look through me, you know. And that was a bit creepy for me as a kid. You know, like, what is that? Why does she look through me, you know?
Well, she was a very warm and loving individual. And,
yeah.
And I could see why she and your father would get along very well as a team. And she did have... in my opinion, you know, remarkable psychic abilities.
Yeah. Oh, I believe it. And I'm sad that I've missed out on that generation because, you know, when I was born, my father was aged at 51 already.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel a little bit cheated, I have to admit. But, you know, we don't pick or choose how we come into this world and how our situations are. But Sybil would have been somebody that today I really could have used help with.
Right. Well, she was very versatile and very warm and understanding. I've always wanted to ask you personally, what your mother's involvement was. Was she kind of one step behind or one step beyond?
Mother, well, you know, she's a bit of her own entity, if you will, pun intended there, because, you know, she also grew up with a very haunted legacy where her father, who was the Count of Russia, like, this
right.
is a pretty serious position, just, you know, before World War I, he held seances. And he was a real Russian count, so, you know, here he is with a Ruski voice, you know, come, tell me something, and they're at a table holding a seance. I mean, this is out of my mother's family, right? So she's always had a fascination with mediumship, and her mother, who was my grandmother, Rosine Clare, who I wrote about in Growing Up Haunted, was my inspiration because she was so psychic. My father never taught me about mediumship. it was really my grandmother, Rosine, my mother's mother, because they had more of that experience. My father just worked with people like Sybil. So she was right there with him on the level of mediumship, but as far as investigations and how you go about them, she was behind him helping him.
Okay. Okay. I've always been curious about that.
Yeah, but mediumship, she was right there. Yeah.
From what I knew of your mother's history, and, you know, I'm doing this from afar, of course.
Sure.
But from
sure.
what I knew of that, I was always curious why she wasn't more active in your father's research.
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. As we kind of age and grow up, and, you know, since his passing, she and I have had some open conversations, and she always was fascinated by him. She was taken in by him, but I think that she was more about her artwork and about her mm-hmm. own agenda. And I think, and that's kind of where the marriage kind of divided up, which I understand. But, you know, he was so controlling over his environment that I think he made it almost impossible to allow anybody, including my mother, in, to the point of where if he didn't feel like he was in control, it didn't matter who you were. And I think that was kind of like part of his downfall in some ways in business. So that definitely was a big problem.
Well, we should mention your book, Growing Up Haunted. You know,
if you feel.
Well, it's a fascinating view, you know, of have been in some. Well, I imagine it was both exploratory and kind of cathartic for you to write it, wasn't it?
It was bizarre, and, you know, it's funny because some people would write in reviews saying, well, there's no ghost stories in here. And it's like, well, there are stories in there about happenings in a haunted farmhouse that was purchased, not on purpose to be haunted, but that just, by the way, it's haunted, and look who bought it, Hans Holzer. It's a kind of a running joke in the family. It's pretty funny, actually. But those who are intelligent get it, and those who are less kind of, I guess, don't. But that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, they were looking for a ghost hunting book because, unfortunately, when the book was published in 08, that's when all these books were popping out more so now today. But, you know, I think people just run the gamut, and that's what we talked about in the beginning of the show, labeling. And I think there was this assumption, oh, holes are ghosts. And it was it's a memoir. It says memoir, clearly. But it
well,
was
we want to get into some of your own ghost research.
Yes.
Yeah. We will. We have just a minute or so to the break. Dad passed on when he was 89. He had a very rich life, obviously. Is there something that sticks out in your memory as one of his great achievements? One thing that really made him feel good about all the decades of work he had put into this?
That he made people aware, that he was able to reach people and have them answer back to him in a way that they finally understood the purpose of their existence and not to fear and to understand that what he was doing was the way and to basically not judge him or, you know, criticize themselves, just to let it go and let it be. And everything with him was, okay, no big deal. Like, he never questioned anything. He always said, why not? Okay.
I like that. That's nice. That's nice. Why not?
Very nice.
Like, it's not possible. Let's turn it around. Why not? And take a look at things and examine them objectively. Yeah. That's very, very good.
But making people aware, I agree. That's what it's all about.
He was involved with the Amityville horror investigation, of course. More on that later tonight. And many other haunted locations around the world. He was, I guess, quite a traveler. Did he ever say that he had experienced something that really shook him up?
Not really. I think the reason why is because he didn't look at it the way it's portrayed today. I think when we see things on TV, we assume, oh, my God, that must be horrific. But when you deal with somebody, well, you know, I mean, editing is a marvelous thing.
Right,
but
when you
deal with the real thing and somebody like him on a level where we just kind of, he was, I feel, like the Einstein of the paranormal. You just can't even, you're in awe of it. He just kind of walks out of an environment that could have shaken the person next to him tenfold, and he will walk out of it and say, yeah, well, you know, we'll get to the bottom of it. Don't worry. He just wasn't fazed.
Very interesting. Very interesting. All right, we have to do our top of the hour break. Another half an hour to go with Alexandra, so stay with us as we continue. Brad and I are in our second of three Halloween programs for the year 2011. Of course, next Monday night, we'll be with you for Halloween night.